John Doe, do you have a lawyer? And he said, yeah. I said, let's stop everything right now. I want you to take these papers, go see your lawyer, have him review them, and give you the okay. Because I want to make sure that you understand nobody's trying to get over on you. I'm here as your representative, and I highly recommend that you see an attorney. And he said, thank you very much. I'm going to go find my wife. And
you did refer him to a criminal attorney, right?
No.
Oh, that was later?
Yeah, we weren't going for the insanity plea yet.
Welcome to the Uncensored Real Estate Podcast, where nothing is off limits. If you're interested in buying, selling, or investing in real estate, and you want to learn some of the insider secrets and uncensored truths from the true professionals in and around real estate, you've come to the right place. Now, let's buckle up for the uncensored truth about real estate and join your host, Brian Cardenas.
All right, so just wanted to welcome you all to the inaugural episode of the Uncensored Real Estate Podcast, where nothing is off limits. So we're going to have conversations with people that are in and around the real estate industry to hopefully learn some things that you might not know, that you probably should know, and get some opinions from all the players that are involved. And so today, the very first guest that I invited to join me is Frank Aira with EXP Realty. And Frank and I have known each other for quite a number of years. You remember
how long? I think we're going on 8-9 years now.
8-9 years?
Yeah.
So the interesting thing about how I met Frank is I used to do some training classes for real estate agents, and we would teach marketing and lead generation, things like that. And this is the guy that showed up to the training class with his big 27-inch Mac monitor. I believe it was a Mac, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah,
I knew there was a problem first when you brought a Mac into my class.
What's the matter with it? It was actually a touchscreen, and it fit under my arm like a surfboard, so I figured I could take it anywhere.
You came in sandals that day, too, didn't you?
Yes, I did. Absolutely. Me and John somebody.
Yeah, so Frank's been, somebody that I've been friends with and worked together with for a long time. And so, you know, I wanted to make sure that if we tried to talk about things that were important to people, we brought somebody that actually knew some stuff. Because, you know, not everybody in this industry knows what they're doing. A lot of people can get into it relatively easily if you invest 90 hours of your life into classes and get your tests. But there's a few people like Frank that actually know what they're doing.
Well, so, thank you. I appreciate that.
I want to make sure we brought you here. And I really kind of want to just start things out by asking you, you know, what is it that you think is really important for people as consumers to know about real estate that they probably don't know?
Well, one of the things that's probably tantamount to everything else is that a transaction isn't just strictly among the listing agent, the seller, the buying agent, and the buyer. It's especially in this market today that's so competitive, you have to have a plan. And one of the most important things that you have with a plan is communication, and it's gotta be a team effort. And if you're a buyer, you wanna make sure that your realtor explains to you what's going to happen through the process. And most importantly, when you find a property that you and your family wanna make an offer on, how you can be in the very best position to maximize your offer. And that's through communication and teamwork. And when I say teamwork, it's obviously why we've known each other for so long, because we work together with either a buyer that I bring to you or a buyer that you bring to me. And we coordinate a full strategic plan via communication, developing relationships with the listing agent, you, myself, and that's the most important thing, understanding that you're just not going to have an agent send you properties. You're going to say, I like this, they write it, and they send it, and they tell you, oh, sorry, you didn't get it. We put you in the very best position, and that's how you have to interview realtors and lenders. They both want to be on board. You want a lender that says, hey, I need the contact information of your realtor, and I say, hey, I need the contact information of your lender prior to me even sending you properties, so that we know what we can do for you and get you the very best, again, ability to get that offer.
So, I mean, we've got this crazy, stupid market that's been going on for a couple of years now where, prices have just gone up astronomically. I mean, over 30% in the greater Phoenix area in the last year alone. What do you see as, like, one of the strategies that a buyer can use, aside from the communication aspect, but really specifically, what can they do to make an offer as appealing as possible when they're out there competing with investors, you know, that are offering cash? Because, you know, we hear all this stuff, like agents like to say that, you know, we get our offers accepted over cash. Well, like, how do you do that?
Well, one of the things, again, is they have to be comfortable asking questions, and that maybe they don't have the answer and be able to go out and get the answer. Like, you know, you and I will talk, I'll call you and say, hey, this buyer that you're handling really likes this house. There's going to be probably 20 offers on them. Do we have additional funds for them to come in and maybe do an appraisal modification or waive the appraisal altogether? Generally, you always have them completely credit approved,
right,
through underwriting, conditioned to finding a property. That's huge, number one. But also understanding that, do they have additional funds to maybe employ an escalation clause? And again, the appraisal modification, if not a full waiver. When you have those abilities to do that and you're working as a team and you can communicate that to the listing agent proactively, that sets you so far ahead. And generally you've got cash buyers that think that cash is so much better that they will usually come in a little lower. And so if you can, through communicating to that listing agent as a team, lender and agent, hey, my clients are golden, this is what they can do. By the way, also, they could probably do something more, or they can't. This is where we're at. We're giving you our best offer. They are golden. They are approved by the lender, and he's going to call you and tell you they can close. So it's really, it's such teamwork, and, you know, everybody's doing the heavy lifting, and we all do it.
Right. So you mentioned the escalation clause. Can you kind of explain that for people who don't know what that is?
Yeah. Like,
how does that work, and how does that give you better chances of getting an offer accepted?
An escalation clause is a item that what you would do is you would write in a clause on your contract. So let's say you had a $400,000 property and you're offering $400,000. You would then write in, should a competing offer come in higher, buyer will pay up to X number of dollars over that competing offer, not to exceed some cap. And so what that does is if you have two similar offers and one comes in and it's a little higher than yours, your escalation clause kicks in. Let's say it's $1,000 over the competing offer. So you come in at $400,000, the other offer comes in at $405,000, and you have an escalation clause $1,000 higher, that automatically makes your offer $406,000. And
so you also mentioned a cap in there. Is there always a limit to how much you want to go? Is there some benefits to not putting any limit on there?
There are sometimes, if the buyer is near the top of their amount that they can afford to pay, you probably will put a cap on it. In other words, if they can't go more than 425 and they're offering 400, you would say not to exceed 425. If you've got more latitude than that, then don't put a cap on it, because what'll happen is the listing agent is going to call you and say, hey, here's the number, can you do it? Probably get me in trouble with my brokers for saying that. We have a fiduciary responsibility to our clients.
So I think that's something that we've done in the past, and I think, you know, is warranted in terms of things to consider. Like, if you don't put a cap on it, and we know from the financing side of it that they can qualify, they may not want to go that high, because oftentimes that's really the key. If you got a $400,000 house, you know, the buyer may have in their mind, well, I'm not going over a 425 or 450 or whatever that number happens to be. But the reality is if you don't put a cap on it, and let's say, you know, 450 was their max that they wanted to do, or that they could do, maybe we could only get them qualified for 450, and you put no cap and it went up to 451, and the listing agent comes back to you and says, hey, we're at 451, are your buyer still able to do it? Do we think that the buyer might be able to figure out, you know, do they have an extra $1,000 somewhere, a relative that can float them $1,000? But if you put a cap on it and it's at 451, then they conceivably could lose out.
You're out
by $1,000. You know, I think so many times you go back to a buyer and say, hey, would you have paid an extra $1,000 or $2,000 for this house if you hadn't put the cap on there? Like, well, yeah, of course.
Yeah.
You know,
no, it's that. And that's, I think that's why it's, you have such a more better opportunity by not putting a cap on there. You know, if you know, and sometimes a buyer will just say, I'm just telling you, I know if it comes in $50 over, I'm not paying it. But I think that, you know, that's a decision.
When they tell you that, they're probably lying though, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Like, don't go out to dinner one night under $50.
And I'm certainly not going to tip my hat and say, I'll throw the 50 in, because I know you will.
Yeah. We're going to get a little battle. Who's going to spend the 50
sure,
bucks?
Sure. I'll split it with you. Right.
We can afford to do that,
I think.
Think
we can, yeah.
So, you know, one of the things that you also talked about is waiving the appraisal. What is the risk of doing that? And maybe explain a little bit more what you mean by waiving the appraisal.
Well, if you're financing the property, there's the bank, the lender is going to require that an appraisal is done to make sure that it's not, they're not overextending, they're not overlending on the property. And so that's part of the contract. You're going to go ahead and have an appraisal done on the property. Well, when you're with a lot of competing offers, people start going, well, I'll tell you what, I'll go ahead and waive the appraisal completely. That now takes probably the most major contingency out of the game, aside from the inspection, because in this market where, like you said, properties are appreciating at levels of 30%, 35%, the appraisals can't keep up with the speed of the sale prices. And so you get to a position where everybody knows the property's not going to appraise. So they're going back going, who's willing to waive the appraisal? So that's generally a very good strategic tool to have if you can do it. A lot of people can't go completely in on waiving the appraisal, but they can do what's called an appraisal modification. And it generally, to put it in simple terms, is if the appraisal fails to appraise at full purchase price, buyer will come up with an additional X number of dollars and not to exceed the original purchase price. And so that makes it much more attractive to a seller.
So sounds like there's some risk though for the buyers in doing that, because we kind of anticipate that maybe that appraisal might come in a little bit low.
Yes.
And then they have to come up with, you know, a bunch of extra cash potentially to be able to make that work. What's one of the things that we can do to try to help mitigate that risk of the appraisal coming in low and then having to come up with extra out of pocket?
Well, at that point, both the buyer's agent and the listing agent are vested in this for their clients. And so we have to be well versed on where we think it's going to come in, so that the buyer knows that this is potentially what they might have to make up. And when I say that it could be devastating to them, is because if you get through all your contingencies and the property doesn't appraise and you put in an appraisal modification of, say, coming up with an additional $10,000, and you can't, you've now breached your contract and you could lose your earnest money. So we have to be very forward in explaining and making sure that they understand that. And that's what our job is to make sure our clients are educated and consulted to as best as we can to them, and make sure that they understand it.
Yeah, and the reality is in this market, buyers sometimes are going to have to take risk. You know,
yes.
When you're not in this market and you've got a buyer's market, the buyers can sit back and make sure they're fully protected in every aspect of the contract contingencies and not have to worry about it because they got sellers scrambling. But, you know, roles are reversed right now. Sellers have all the leverage. Buyers are the ones who have to take on some risk, and they need to be informed risk. Obviously, you know, you don't want to take risks and have your clients not be aware of them. I know one of the things that we've done sometimes is as soon as we get under contract, we rush the appraisal, you know, pay a little bit extra, might be an extra couple hundred dollars or what have you,
yes,
to get a rush on the appraisal and get that appraisal back in that 10-day
yes,
inspection contingency window. And that way, if it does come in low during that window of time, you really have the ability to get out of that contract for any reason. And one of the things that I find curious sometimes, you know, I've talked to agents about it, and in the language of our contract here in Arizona, one of the pieces of that inspection contingency period is the value of the property.
Absolutely.
Some agents come to me and say, well, you know, I don't feel good about doing that because you're saying you're waiving the appraisal contingency, and then you're going to come back if the appraisal comes in low and potentially, you know, get out of the contract.
That's an inspection item.
Yeah. And to me, it's like, it's in the contract. It's an inspection item. It's listed there in black and white. You're following the letter of the contract, and, you know, you're protecting your clients, and it gives the clients a little bit more leverage, you know, to do that. Cause now, you know, you're a week in, maybe 10 days into the contract, that seller might be under contract to purchase another property and they need to close on time as well. And I think the buyers are able to come back and take back a little bit of that leverage from the sellers if it does come in low. I mean, can they go back and renegotiate on the price if it comes in low during that inspection period?
Everything is always negotiable. That's it. Yeah, we have the Arizona Association of Realtors purchase contract is as is. It's already written as is. So when you have someone, you have a buyer submit a contract to a seller that says buyer will take property as is, it's redundant. It's already in the contract. So again, what does that mean? It means they're still going to do an inspection. They're just saying out of all the 15 other offers, we'll take it as is. Well, they go in and they do their inspections, and then they call the listing agent and go, whoa, there's a lot more here than we expected. You've got a major problem here, a major problem there. You know, obviously we said we wouldn't do anything. So we're going to go ahead and cancel. What do you think the listing agent's going to say? The listing agent's going to say,
yes, go bye-bye. Let me start over.
Let me know what the big issues are and I'll go talk to my sellers. And so, yeah, again, everything's negotiable. You know, unless you put 0 days inspection on that purchase contract, then you've really waived the inspection contingency.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, I don't know if people are out there doing that, but that's pretty risky to do.
It's incredibly risky.
Zero inspection ability, because you don't know if the foundation's falling apart, you know, the roof's caving in or anything like that.
Those are, when you have a conversation with a buyer like that, you hope they're an investor, because if they're not and they still tell you, do it or I'll get someone else to do it, you say, I'll tell you what, I'm going to send you an email and you're going to send it back saying, yes, we told you to do it, because there's just so much risk.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, the idea about buyers taking on risk, one of the things that it's unusual for buyers to contemplate on is their earnest deposit. You know, we like the earnest deposit is there to show, you know, intent
and skin in the game.
I'm willing to go forward, and after this inspection period or after these contingencies, like the appraisal contingency, the financing contingency, when these things are gone, that's when your earnest deposit becomes at risk of being lost. Sometimes that's just the risk you have to take to try to compete. Like if you're going to get rid of the financing contingency, you know, you can do that. People don't like doing it, and it's not something that everyone wants to do, but you can do it if you're willing to take on that risk of losing your earnest deposit. You know, if you're confident, if we've got you fully approved as a lender, you know, you've gone through the credit underwriting process, the only things that you have at risk then is an issue with title, an issue with the appraisal, or you lose your job.
Yep.
Or you go buy a car.
Sort of that.
Right. Well, you're trying to get a house. You can't qualify now because you got to do car payment. Like if you do dumb things like that, then yeah, you're risking your earnest deposit. But like sometimes that's what you have to put at risk. You have to be willing to risk that $2,000, $5,000, whatever.
Well, and when you're on the listing side representing your seller, you'll get a bunch of offers. You'll have some appraisal modifications in there, but everyone's putting up $2,000 earnest money on a $400,000 purchase. So what you have to tell your buyers to be aware of is if they do go for that, you're probably better off coming in with high earnest money, because a good listing agent is not going to take an appraisal waiver or an appraisal modification of, say, $10,000, and there's only $2,000 skin in the game. So you would be advised to say, okay, let's come in with $10,000 earnest money, because now we know, these chances are you're going to get countered anyway. So the seller's going to come back and go, we appreciate you saying you'll pay more than the appraised price, but $2,000 isn't going to cut it. You send us $10,000,
right,
and we'll get in there. And so, you know, it's important, again, that those are all things that buyers, especially in this market, need to understand thoroughly. And when they come from the lender and the agent, they're sitting back going, you know what? I feel pretty comfortable. I don't know if we'll get this property, but I know that this team is going to give us our best foot forward that we can do. And that's you know, that's what we do.
Yeah, I mean, I think at the end of the day, you brought up in the very beginning, is the communication between all parties is really important. How many times on average do you talk to a listing agent before you send in an offer?
I first of all, never set an appointment through a text, an email, or our showing time app, which does it automatically. I always call the listing agent to introduce myself, tell them that my clients are interested in the property, they found it and send it to me, and would like to know a little more about it. Also, are there any offers? And then, you know, just talk about the property, talk about the sellers, and then we go forward. Also, it's very smart in this market. Most properties don't last a weekend. Yeah. So you have your clients getting excited about two or three properties, send you two or three. You go show them, they want to write on one, and that's first time you call the listing agent, tell them you're sending an offer. Like, oh, I forgot to change it to pending. It's gone. And now you are the messenger.
Yeah.
Who's going to get killed because you showed them a property and they don't understand how you didn't know it was done already. So you always start the rapport building with whether you're a listing agent or whether you're a buyer's agent. Again, communication. And like I said, in this world, tough.
Well, I mean, if you don't call the listing agent, have that conversation that you're talking about where you try to find out about the sellers, you know, at the end of the day, this market is such that the sellers are the ones who have all the control.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to learn what the sellers want in order to craft that offer to meet the seller's needs. If you've never had a conversation with a listing agent, you have no idea. Do they want to stay in the property afterward? Do they want to close mm-hmm. fast?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do they like, you know, a larger down payment? Do they want a higher earnest amount? I mean, all sorts of different things can come into play. Are they moving out of state? Are they under contract in another property? There's so many questions that you can ask to glean information out of the listing agent without the listing agent really tipping their hand too much, not doing a disservice to their client. But the more that you learn, the more that you can understand about, okay, when we write this offer, we need to do this with the seller being able to stay after closing. You know, talk with them about, you know, do you want to try to charge rent, you know, for them to stay for a while? Do you want to just let them stay for free? You know, all these different things you learn in those conversations, right?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I tell my team members, the most important question to ask when you know you're going to be writing an offer and you call the listing agent to let them know, is say, hey, we're going to be presenting an offer. I'm preparing it now. What is your client's preferred close of escrow date? Because some people don't want 10 days, or if you can do it in 10 days, or they might need 45, and or they might need a post-possession, and that's when you find that out. And those are key because you're getting a clean offer with all the information that they require at that time. And you don't have to worry about, well, we need to send you a counter because 30 days isn't long enough. We need 60 days. And so while they're getting that counter prepared and everybody's in agreement, here comes another offer that smokes you out of the water.
Yeah. So what about larger down payments? Is that something that you think is helpful on the buyer's side? And then maybe as a listing agent, what perception does that give you? Or would you want to take a higher down payment over a lower down payment?
It really matters if it's a substantially high down payment, because now you know there's a good chance that the underwriter is going to have an appraisal. They're going to waive an appraisal. There's so much money coming in that they don't have to do it. You probably can address that better than I can. But generally, if you have someone that can't come in with, you know, they can only come in with 20%, but you know they're solid, then that's, again, where the communication comes in, because you call them and say, look, my clients are putting 20 down. I don't know if you've got higher down payments, but we are through the underwriting process. We just have to get through inspections and appraisal. Loan, there isn't going to be any issue on the loan not being approved. So those are, you know, so sometimes it doesn't matter. The down payment isn't that severe, but or that important in the decision-making process. And sometimes it is.
Yeah, one of the things that, you know, when we're talking to clients and we're trying to give them advice on how to structure their financing, oftentimes it's more beneficial for people to put less money down and leave their money in investments, because mm-hmm. they can usually, I mean, as we're recording this now, the stock market is tanking. So this doesn't apply to today, But generally speaking, you can earn more money by leaving it invested somewhere than it's going to cost you to borrow that money. And so we put the numbers together and show people, reinvestment strategies. If you put your money invested as opposed to putting more down, how do the numbers shake out? And, you know, advise them and let them make the decision on that. But it also comes into play when making an offer, because one of the things that happens is a lot of times with 20% down, we can get that appraisal waiver on the loan, not the contingency part of the contract, but the automated underwriting systems that we all use will come back and say, okay, the risk is low enough because you're putting 20% down that you don't have to get an appraisal. So that's an advantage of 20% down. But from the transaction side of it, if you don't have that and you do have to get an appraisal, then from the buyer standpoint, we can create a way to structure the financing where if it comes in low and there's a $20,000 gap, in the appraised value versus the purchase price, we just reduce the down payment percentage. Yeah, they might end up with mortgage insurance, but with good credit, that's a pretty minimal cost. It can keep them from having to come up with the extra $20,000 difference because we just drop their down payment down. And then the difference in their monthly payment is usually pretty minimal. And so, when someone's looking at, I can take $20,000 out of my investment account that I'm earning 10% returns at versus keep that invested, just drop my down payment, and maybe my payment goes up by $100 a month. They can stomach $100 a month increase in the payment a lot easier than an extra $20,000.
Well, and isn't it with mortgage insurance, it's a percentage of, how does that work? When can you remove mortgage insurance?
So a few different ways to do it. The way that it's scheduled to be dropped off is at 78% of the original purchase price. They can do generally about after 2 years of being in the mortgage insurance, they can request an appraisal to establish the new value of the property. And if their loan balance is at 80% of that, then most loan servicers will drop that mortgage insurance. But another thing that can be done is, if you're in a market when you're going to refinance in a short period of time, like today, our interest rates are as high as they've been in a couple of years. Based upon everything that's going on in the economy right now, we're anticipating that there's going to be a recession coming. Whether people understand what that means or not is debatable, but what that generally means is that interest rates will go down. So there's going to be some opportunities in the next couple of years, in all likelihood, that people will be able to refinance. Well, if home prices keep going up by even 10%, you might be in a position in a year or 2 years to refinance, probably get a lower rate, have enough equity now, you don't need mortgage insurance, reduce your payment there. So again, it's just all strategies about how do I get the house? Because the house is the most valuable thing that people can have right now. Even in a recession, home prices are probably going to continue to go up because we have such a low supply of homes that if you've got to make some concessions in lifestyle for a year or two to get the house that you want, you're going to have a pretty solid appreciating asset over the next couple of years that you can make cost less money, down the road.
Well, and that's another thing when we, our initial question was, what can we tell the consumer about real estate and that they might not know? And one of the more common themes that I hear from potential buyers who are thinking about getting into the market and buying a property is, well, we're thinking that maybe we should wait a little while longer for the market to crash. And at that point, you really have to become an educator to them, because I can tell you, I'm my stat guy. This morning, before this interview, there are in an area that services probably 5 to 6 million people, there are currently 4,800 and some number of active listings for sale. That number should be, in 2017, that number was 23,000. It should be about 35,000. So yes, I don't want to argue with a buyer saying the market's going to crash, because none of us have great foresight into that. But as I tell you all the time, Brian, we're not in a housing shortage. We are in a housing crisis, and it applies to people even competing for rents in a rental market. And I talk to so many people that are renting. They're like, we're doing everything we can to buy because nobody will sign a year lease with us because they think they're going to sell. Potentially. So it's like we had to move four times in 2 years. So it's wow. it's letting them understand that this is going to be a seller's market for a long time. Builders can't keep up. We have supply chain issues for them anyways. And by the way, their contracts are structured where they now have escalation clauses in for increases in materials. So you could go into a house that you put under contract with a builder. They tell you it's probably going to be a year out, and you wrote it for, we'll use 400,000 again, magic word today, magic number, 400,000. And you get 6 months into it and they're like, well, we had some increases, and right here in the fine print of your contract says that we can raise it 5% or 6% or whatever that number is. And suddenly you're like, whoa, wait a second, what happened here? And those are conversations that you got to have. And that's why you always get a realtor with a new build.
So wait, you're telling me that a new build contract is written to benefit the builder and not the buyer?
Oh, no.
Amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
But they don't encourage you to get representation on your own because they're going to take care of you, right?
Absolutely. They're always going to take good care of you. So, yeah, the big difference between the builder contract and an Arizona Association of Realtors contract. The Arizona Association of Realtors contract has contingencies that you can get out on things that you don't agree. And especially the important thing with a new build is a lot of people, they have design centers. So they get a base price, they zip into the design center, it's a candy store, and they come out with, $100,000 of extras. And they're in. I mean, that's it. There isn't any, it didn't appraise. And when the house comes in 50,000 light, you don't come up with the 50,000, all that money that you've given, those deposits, they go. So it's very, very important that you understand the marketplace. And that's why it's good to have a realtor when you're doing a new build, especially.
All right, we'll take a break for just a quick second and we'll be right back.
So you want a house, but you keep getting beat out by all the cash buyers and institutional investors. So what do you do? Well, you need to call us at the Cardenas team at Finance of America Mortgage. We can turn you into a cash buyer even if you need a mortgage, so you can beat out the competition and get the home that you want. Visit us at www.thecardenasteam.com or call us at 480-331-4684 to schedule a free consultation. The Cardenas team, we treat you like family.
So welcome back from the break here. Frank, real estate's fun. Usually, sometimes, not always. What's one of the craziest things that has happened to you in your real estate career?
Well, Brian, actually, you were part of it. We know where we're going here, don't we?
I know where you're going.
Well, you know, on the day before close or the day of close, generally the buyer will go into the title office and sign the papers. And I was working with... We were working with some clients and...
they shall remain nameless.
Nameless, absolutely.
To protect the guilty.
Yes. And needless to say, one of the two within the party were paranoid, maybe? I don't know. But was quite convinced that when you came in to sign, you were going to get the keys to the house on that spot. And I had explained in great detail that no, you go in and sign the paperwork, they'll send it back to the lender. Lender will say, okay, we're sending the money. And then once the title receives the money, they're going to record and they'll send it out. And she didn't think that that was accurate. And so I thought she had expressed this to me the day before signing. So I thought, I generally don't go to signings, they're quick. They're, you know, between the notary, the escrow officer, and the buyer. And usually the only other time I went, the buyers looked at me and said, you really came to this? Wow, that was really nice of you, but that must have been boring. I said, it really was. But I knew this one was going to be important. So I arrived, 8 a.m, sat down with my clients and the notary public, and one of the two parties said, wait, before we sign anything, where are the keys? And I just sort of backed up and said, I'm not saying anything. I looked at the notary, independent third party, and she said, well, that's not how it works. You don't get the keys until we receive the money and we record the deed, and then you'll get a happy email saying, congratulations, we've recorded. Well, she leaped up, looked at her husband and said, I can't believe you're going to sign those papers. I'm not signing them. I'm leaving. You people are all trying to get over on us, and you're going to take our money. So she got up and stormed out of the office, and I looked at the husband, and he's like, what do I do?
What month of the year was this?
Was it August? I think it was August.
What was the temperature outside when you did this?
It was hot.
Like, I think it was like 115 degrees.
We were a little concerned of her well-being because she disappeared for most of the day. But the husband looked at me, and he looked at the escrow, the notary. And notary said, this is boilerplate. I mean, if you sign, great. If you don't sign, you don't close. And so he said, give me the pen. And I said at that moment, I went, John Doe, do you have a lawyer? And he said, yeah. I said, let's stop everything right now. I want you to take these papers, go see your lawyer, have him review them, and give you the okay. Because I want to make sure that you understand nobody's trying to get over on you. I'm here as your representative, and I highly recommend that you see an attorney. And he said, thank you very much. I'm going to go find my wife. And
you did refer him to a criminal attorney, right?
No.
Oh, that was later?
Yeah, we weren't going for the insanity plea yet. But anyways, they called me a little later. He had found her about 3 hours later. And
she was out wandering the street, wasn't she?
Out wandering the street, 115 degrees. Yeah, we were actually very concerned about her. And then he said, all right, I signed the papers. Everything's good. When do we get our keys? And she's in the background going, we're never getting our beep, beep, beep keys. Don't you understand? They just stole all of our money. You lied to me. You lied to me. At that point, I took it offensively because I did not lie to her. I would never lie to anybody. This is too easy to lie to anybody.
Right.
You know, this is about your word and representing your clients. But I did get that congratulatory email. We closed. And
it didn't end there, though.
No.
Do you remember what happened after that?
Yeah, after that.
We had to kind of work a miracle.
Ryan was great. The appraisal was contingent upon some woodwork having paint put over it, and they couldn't get out there. They didn't want to delay the close, so Brian got them to come out afterwards just to verify. And then you take it over from here.
Well, yeah, the appraiser went out there to go and just do a visual inspection that had been painted. I think it was some eaves that had been painted. Mm-hmm. And he went out there and knocked on the door, and then she started threatening him to get off of his property. He's trespassing. That was why I was wondering if it was a criminal attorney, because you had some forethought that might be where it was going.
A little dangerous.
But yeah, fortunately, the appraiser ended up taking some photos from afar to verify that the work had been completed so we could actually finish the loan up so that he didn't, you know, get beat over the head with a broomstick or something.
No, I'm going to say that I'd like to think that I make great business relationships, be it a client or a lender or a home warranty company or an escrow company. And I thought I would look up that property and see if they still owned it. And they had sold the house and they didn't use me again.
I'm sure you were heartbroken.
Really can't get over it.
That's one of those things where, you know, you hate to see that a past client went and did a transaction without you, but that probably didn't crush you.
No,
when that was happening.
That wasn't, that didn't break my heart, to say the least. But I can tell you that imagine being a new licensed agent, and that's your first client. That would be the end of it.
Scare you away.
Go ahead, never quit.
Like, I did not sign up for this kind of shit.
Be all over with. So thanks for bringing that back and reliving that memory.
Yeah. Never hurts to have a little PTSD come back and get you.
No. Never a problem, only a challenge. We love challenges. We love them.
Of course. That's the thing that keeps it interesting for us.
Yep.
So one last thing before we kind of get finished up here. If you had a piece of advice that you would give to homeowners in this particular market, what would it be?
To not make a decision because you haven't talked to somebody that can answer questions for you. I talk to so many potential sellers that say, you know, we'd love to sell. We know we're at the top of the market. We're going to make a lot of money. And, you know, we're going to move to Minnesota or some out of state or down to Florida. But we don't want to sell our house because we haven't found another one. And we don't want to sell it and have to move and then move twice. And I would say probably 90% of my transactions over the last year where I represented the seller, it was not a problem. We got them a post-possession. So that's, you know, if you talk to a professional, they'll tell you whether you can get one or not. And in this market, buyers are so eager to be able to finally stop writing offers, get one accepted, and actually get shelter, you know, buy a home, move in with your family, and it's your own, that you can do it. You can ask for a post possession. They're a dime a dozen today. You know, we're not talking, you know, you might need a weekend, you might need a week. We're doing post possessions that are going as long and far out as 60 days these days. Now, Brian obviously will tell you if you get beyond 30 days, you might want to talk to the lender first because there's some restrictions potentially. But you can sell your house, close, and then go find a house.
Yeah, I think that's the biggest thing. There's so many misperceptions that the public in general has mm-hmm. about what's going on in the market. They hear all this, you know, scare tactics and fear mongering and the media about, you know, you can't buy a house, you can't sell a house, you can't find something, you can't afford it. It's like all negativity.
Yep.
And the reality is there's tons of great opportunities. Not to say that it's the easiest time in the world to do it, but there's usually solutions. So whatever your issue is, your challenge might be, if you talk to educated and, you know, really professional advisors, both in real estate and lending, you can usually find solutions, you know, if you really take the advice of people and think things through and find ways to do things. Because, you know, people still want to sell houses. People still want to buy houses. It's a unique market for sure, but it can happen if you've got the right people.
Absolutely. And again, what we alluded to earlier was everything is negotiable. So as long as you think in those terms, you can approach any situation with any scenario you want and come to a meeting of the minds, and you should be able to. You know, it's kind of funny, reminds me as we end here of I represented some buyers, and they agreed the seller needed a 30-day post-possession. And the only negotiable item was that the buyers insisted when the sellers did a post-possession that they wore masks all the time in the house. We got it done too. They had to be N95s.
How did they enforce that one?
It's all negotiable.
Man, crazy. You do ever think you'd have a time where part of your real estate negotiation was involving what you wear in your own household on your face?
You know, I have a great relationship with Dr. Fauci, and he talked to everybody and told them that would be okay.
And they trusted him, right?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Because he doesn't lie.
No.
He always tells the truth. No.
Well, there went half of our market.
Oh, well, I think we'll survive. Well, it's time to get things wrapped up. Frank, yep. Just want to say thanks for
Brian,
coming in and joining me.
I'm so privileged that you thought of me for the first one. I really do. I take it as a great compliment. Thank you.
Well, you're tolerant and accepting because you knew that we'd be screwing this up left and right, and I knew that you wouldn't worry too much about
content.
It.
We delivered content. I hope.
There you go. All right. Thanks very much for joining us. Look forward to seeing you guys next time. Take care.
If you'd like to reach out to today's guest, Frank Aero, you can reach him at 310-804-8436 or by email at frank.aero, that's spelled E-Y-R-A-U-D, at exprealty.com. Thanks for joining us, and please remember to subscribe, like, share, you know, all that cool stuff to help us grow.
and come back tomorrow to listen to our next episode. Until then, go out and live life uncensored.
Thanks for listening to the Uncensored Real Estate Podcast. Don't forget to help us out and subscribe. Follow and give us a 5-star rating on your favorite podcast platform. And check us out on YouTube for the full video podcast. If you want more information on any of the topics discussed on today's episode, email us at uncensoredrealestatepodcast@gmail.com or give the Cardenas Mortgage Team a call at 480-331-4684.